This episode is brought to you by the Arvada Center, because they're kicking off their summer concert series in June. Relax under the stars at the Arvada Center's outdoor amphitheater and take in acts like Melissa Etheridge, Big Richard, Tower of Power, Preservation Hall Jazz Band, The Spin Doctors, and so much more. Concerts are scheduled for June through September. You can find a whole schedule of events and get your tickets today at arvadacenter.org. That's arvadacenter.org.
Today on CityCast Denver, if it seems like everyone is joining a union right now, you are not wrong. This summer has seen more union activity than we've had for decades, according to a new report from the Denver Post. And the solidarity is spreading from King Soopers and Starbucks to staff at homeless shelters, and now servers at the Mercury Cafe. Me and Bree are talking about all the big union news with one of our favorite guests. Then we're celebrating, and lamenting, this week's Mile High Highs and Lows. Today is Friday, August 18th. I'm Paul Caroli, and here's what Denver's talking about. Welcome back to CityCast Denver, the show about the city that has a brand new craft brewery. That's right, Bree. Thanks to some international corporate consolidation, Breckenridge Brewery is now, again, technically small enough to be considered craft.
Wait, so they got booted from their corporation?
They were sold to a cannabis company that is small enough, and now that the way that the brands are organized, apparently it's very specific how you categorize these breweries now.
I mean, long-time listeners will know I don't drink, but also really long-time listeners would know when I did drink, I certainly did not look at what the label even said on that beer.
We're no craft beer.
Chugged it and got as messed up as fast as I possibly could. So,
did you have a favorite? You've mentioned Miller High Life before.
High Life, for sure. And Bud Light out of the taps. There used to be this bar called the Climax Lounge, and the beer out of those taps just tastes like honey. It was so good because they probably never clean their taps. Uh-huh. And they serve their beer in demi pitchers, like tiny pitchers. So you just drank from a pitcher. You didn't even need a cup.
Oh, yeah.
They knew their audience, yeah, target audience.
They knew.
Me, hipster me, circa 2002. Me and all my dumb friends with our dumb bands drinking their crappy beer. Rest in peace, Climax Lounge.
You drank Miller instead of Coors?
I drank anything watery, clear beer. I did not care.
Still, though.
I might as well have had a funnel.
There's something about it. It's like, I know it's the same beer, but it's water very similar.
Oh, but yeah, not same beer, except one has the Rocky Mountain water in it, you know? All right?
You are buying into that hype, and I appreciate it. I love that for you, Joshua.
Okay. So Bree's here. You've heard her voice. You heard a little bit about her history, which is nice. And our guest today, back in the mix, stand-up comedian. He's the co-chair of the Denver American Indian Commission and the Jumbotron host of the Colorado Mammoth. Is that
That's
the right term?
Let's go, baby. Are y'all ready for some professional lacrosse? It's coming back January. All right. I don't even know what the PLL is. We only know the NLL in this place. Yeah, I'm happy to be here. How you doing?
Welcome back, Joshua Emerson.
Leagues?
Yeah, those are professional lacrosse. That's my life now. I know professional lacrosse leagues, all right?
But that makes you the most interesting man at the party, right? You have the knowledge of something no one else knows.
You know, I guess, yeah. I love lacrosse because it's a game that, you know, it's like preppy white guys, it's big, tough natives, and it's like Canadians that got lost. You know?
That's right. So, this Paul's people, your people.
Exactly.
I was going to say,
my
I know
people.
Some of them.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of all of us.
Let's get into our top story here for the day. We've got a really interesting one, and I'm glad that you two are here to help me pick this apart. So ever since the pandemic scrambled up our economy a few years ago, workers across the country have been organizing for better wages and better work conditions. Here in Denver, we saw a huge win for the King Soopers Union last year, but now this energy is entering new places. That's the news this week, especially. Arts companies like Meow Wolf unionized. That was maybe last year. Iconic entertainment destinations like Casa Bonita. A little bit of organizing happening out there with the workers. Homeless shelters like Urban Peak. That was earlier this year. And now the old Denver mainstay, the Mercury Cafe. Workers are voting next week on forming a union. And that one is getting a little bit messy. Kind of a fight brewing there. But Bree, we should start with the Merc. That's the one you know best. Can you catch listeners up who maybe just aren't familiar with this
business,
what it is, what it means? Because it's not an everyday restaurant.
No. Okay. So the Mercury Cafe is an institution here in Denver for weirdos, poets, musicians, swing dancers. I mean, just every kind of artist. This was their haven. It was owned by a woman named Marilyn McGinnity. Since she had been running restaurants and venues in Denver since the 70s. She was like the first person to book Black Flag. That's like kind of one of her big things she did. She booked all kinds of really cool.
She's like an alt hero.
Yeah, absolutely. She opened the Mercury Cafe at 22nd in California.
Mm-hmm. And right in Five Points.
Right in the middle of Five Points. And it was special for a lot of reasons. Like, she's the only building, I think, in the city that has windmills on the top. Like, she was very into alternative energy sources. She was, to the T, the kind of person that I think a lot of folks aspire to be in young activist circles now. Marilyn's like one of the OGs.
Yeah. So until two years ago.
Yeah, a couple years ago. I think she's in her 70s. She was ready to retire. And she knew that she was sitting on a building that was sitting on very valuable land. And that building was very special, not just to her, but to the community. And she wanted to find somebody to purchase it, because I know she got a lot of offers for much more than she sold it for, because she was looking for someone that wanted to run the business as it was. Enter Danny Newman and his business partners. This group of folks own My Brother's Bar, similar story, institution in Denver. Family wanted to, or yeah, owners wanted to pass it on. Danny came in. Danny's mom, I think, worked there for 30 years. And that place has been running pretty much as it was.
Yeah.
And so
this is his passion. He loves to be the person who comes in and helps keep the Denver tradition alive.
That's where his heart is, I would say. And so he took on this really big project of buying a thing, that an entity that people in Denver really care about. And it has also, hello, the pandemic. It's a restaurant. It's a venue.
Exactly. Yeah.
So he's up against all of those things. And then he's also trying to...
To modernize. He's trying to bring in some credit card processing machines.
Okay. So people good call,
Paul. Don't have to pay with cash.
So longtime patrons of the Mercury Cafe will know that Marilyn did not take credit cards because she didn't want to be in that system. She also didn't want to pay them. She didn't want to pay into the credit card system. Like, this is how deep her ethics went. So all that to say, Danny bought something that was more than a business. It was a thing that meant a lot to a lot of people. And I think when you do that, it's not just that you need to make a business successful or continue its success. You have to make good. A lot of people feel you have to make good on what it is. Like, you have to do right by the community and what they want. And I think he's tried really hard. And I think in this moment, he's just facing something that I think a lot of business owners are facing. But he happens to also have the baggage of, this place is an institution. You better not let it fail.
Let's talk about what he's facing. And a big part of that community that is the Merc right now. And that's his employees.
Yeah.
I think there's 10 to 12 of them. That's what I read. And they are organizing. Here's a quote from the Denver Post from 26-year-old Anna McGee. She said, "I realized I have rights and that I don't have to continue to burn myself out. A lot of people in Denver are in the early stages of this process and connecting with other unions and answering that question of whether this is worth the struggle. The answer is that it's worth it to know you're not helpless, that you have basic rights and deserve to discuss your pay. But it's created a lot of fear and misunderstanding, which we weren't prepared for." Joshua, what do you think?
I mean, it's interesting. The term rights is kind of like a charge term. I think when I think about this, I think about we all have the ability to sort of negotiate for ourselves. And that's the whole idea, is that if you feel like you're not getting a fair shake at the Merc, maybe you go to someplace else where it's a better fit for you. And that's how we efficiently allocate resources. They just do it naturally, that we are all, that the companies are negotiating and the labor is negotiating. I think what ends up happening sometimes, though, is that there isn't a real symmetry of information between companies and between the labor force, and that oftentimes what happens is that labor gets taken advantage of, which is one of the strongest arguments for why we should have collective bargaining agreements. Just the fact that we're stronger together, we're able to be more fight for workers' rights more democratically. But what ends up happening is that increases the cost of labor oftentimes. And who's going to pay that increase in labor? Is it going to be the consumer? Is it going to be the company? There's companies like Meow Wolf, where, you know, 70% of their staff have now joined into a union. They have strong cash flow. And while they might have less profits in the short term, I think long term, keeping staff there longer time, creating a better product in the long term is going to benefit them overall. A place like Mercury hasn't been profitable since he's taken it over.
Right.
And so I'm really curious in terms of, it's really this sort of tight wire where it is an institution where you do want people, you want it to succeed, but you also feel for the workers too, because they want to be a part of the institution, obviously, but they also want to be able to be paid what they're worth, and also just be in a safe environment. It's not the safest place in Denver right now.
Well, let's talk about the location, because this is a block away from the one place in the whole city where Mayor Mike Johnston decided that he needed to do a sweep of a homeless encampment.
Mm.
That's how big and how apparently rat infested that particular street corner was a couple of weeks ago. And this is a block away, and this has become an issue in this organizing fight, because I guess Danny Newman has had to hire some off-duty Denver police to protect these people. And one of their main complaints that they want more support for is just safety late at night when they're leaving.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I often go, I go to the Mercury Cafe for the open mic. I also go, Wide Right is a comedy bar. It's right next to where Mercury is. And it isn't safe. It's something where you just don't feel safe when you walk around. And I can understand, if you're working there every day, that you would want to have the institution help you feel more safe and be more trained to get that sense of, like, if we're going to a place where you need to go to pay rent, like, you want that to be an environment where you can feel safe.
Yeah, for sure. And Bree, you are known as a champion of the working person.
Sure.
You have also talked about,
constantly,
consistently, without fail, I think, to your credit. At the same time, you've talked about how special a place the Mercury Cafe is to you, and how much you respect Danny Newman, what he does. How do you square those two
things? It's a really complicated situation, Paul. I would say I feel for both sides here. I do want these folks to be able to get paid a living wage, and I want them to be able to feel safe in the work environment that they're in. And I also want Danny to be able to provide that. And I wonder, Joshua, you brought this up, they haven't made money in 2 years. I genuinely see the struggle here. I don't know what the solution is. I understand that maybe it's a communication situation where this is where the workers felt they weren't being heard. And that's often when labor union conversations start, I think, is like, we're not getting anywhere with the constant conversations we're trying to have with our management. So I don't know what the communication was. I've reached out to Danny. I haven't heard back from him. I assume he's a pretty busy dude. But I genuinely feel for both sides here, and I want them both to have the things that they need. Of course I want these workers to have basic stuff, safety, good pay, and a good job. I do. But I also don't know where that's going to come from if there isn't even money to, like, I don't know. I mean, I was there for a wedding last weekend, and I'm not sure if this was a choice of the wedding or not, but the food at the wedding was not from the Merc. They had a caterer at the restaurant. And so I was like, ooh, that doesn't seem like a good sign to me. But I don't know the logistics. All I'm saying is, like, I wonder how they could get here. How could they get to a point where they're on the same page? And to me, it sounds like starting with some better communication. I don't know what that looks like, but yeah, it's hard, Paul. I agree. I am. It's a rock and a hard place for me as someone that supports both of these ideas.
Oh, go on, Joshua.
Well, yeah, just to the credit to the workers, right now we have a tight labor market, like, nationwide. And I think the jobs, the unemployment came out, and it's like 3.5 nationwide.
And it's lower here.
It's lower in Denver,
too. They could go somewhere else.
And just so people have a reference, people like to argue that 5% is a good number for an efficient economy. So when you're lower than that, it means that labor does have the power in this. And so if these people leave the market, mark, it's going to be hard for Danny to rehire people.
Totally.
And to retrain them. And that all costs money. So like, what is ultimately the best decision? It might be paying the workers more now. And I think there's another thing in terms of the long-term solution is that if Denverites care about these type of cultural institutions, support them. Yeah. Like go out, yeah. You know.
Go get a drink there.
Exactly. Yeah. There's a lot of places to get coffee. There's a lot of places that they do good art there still. I did the Denver Fringe there. I've done the mics there. There's real poetry. There's real art, real music being played there. Like this is a place that you should be going to if you care about the culture of Denver.
Hmm. I wonder about that caring, that feeling, that like passion of element of this, because I think for young people, I don't know, Bree, when you were talking about the young people, I really related to that. And I remembered I've worked for a business that was, it was not in the same situation. It wasn't like an iconic old business, but it was a young business. It wasn't making money. And I felt like I wasn't being paid what I was worth. And the thing that helped bridge that gap was the communication that you're talking about. My right. boss was just like totally transparent. And it wasn't like she was asking me to be so passionate right. about it. She was just saying, this is what the business is. This is what we're trying to do. You know, this is about the future, what we're trying to make. And hopefully there'll be some benefit there.
I really think that's the crux of this issue here, it sounds like, is the lack of communication between management and employees. Because I too, also, Paul, I've worked for two of my favorite jobs in the city were family-owned companies that were completely transparent about why our pay was the way that was, the trade-offs that we got if we didn't get paid as much, these are the other things that they could offer us. So I hear you. I think that's the crux of the issue. I think the struggle that I have is I see Danny's side where like, he's like, man, I really tried. He and his business partners, I should say, he's the face of a group of people. He's like, man, I really tried to do something right. And maybe I'm just not doing it right. So maybe he could turn around and sell that building tomorrow for four times what he bought it for. Like he's no yeah. idiot. We know the real estate around there is changing every day. He's not doing that. But at the same time, if he did do that, it would not be the fault of the workers that place failed. You know what I mean? Like it's, and that's where I want to make sure the conversation is very clear. This is the success of that place is not dependent. It's partially dependent on the workers and, you know, customer service. Sure. But like they can't make people come in to the restaurant. They can't make the area around it safer. These are working hourly, maybe hourly wage. I mean, we know how it is with tips and this whole conversation yeah. around the service industry is there's so much unevenness around what people are getting paid. So it's just not on the workers to make it successful. But it's kind of a everybody situation.
Yeah, it has to work for everyone. It has to work for the consumer.
Yeah.
They have to be exposed to that art that they enjoy and appreciate.
It's so crucial.
It has to work for the employees because otherwise they'll get in different jobs somewhere else. It has to work for Danny. Otherwise mm-hmm. they'll sell.
Yeah.
That's why a successful business is so impressive. Like when all that comes right? together, it's like actually kind of shocking.
And oddly enough, America does it better than anybody else. I think we have a really good ability to allow people to declare bankruptcy and so that they can try out new ideas. The problem is that when something's been successful and has cultural history like the Merck, it's really hard because sometimes just the life cycle of a business, sometimes they, you know, die and it just is what it is. I mean, we've seen
yeah,
that happen in Denver.
That's the other thing. Is like, the reality of the fact that sometimes things we love just don't have to exist forever.
Right. Yeah.
Which is a brutal thought. I believe me, 100%. I was in the Mercury that last weekend. I have had transformational experiences in that place. I cannot even put words to. I mean, I'm going to sound like my witchy self, but it's a portal. That place is a portal. Like people come in and out of there and important stuff happens in and out of there and it's very connected to just like the thing that roots Denver to this place is a place like the Mercury Cafe. So I don't want that to go away. But I also understand sometimes there's an end of a cycle.
All right. Well, there's obviously plenty more to talk about there, but that'll have to be for a different episode in the future. Right now, we're going to take a quick break and come back with wins and fails.
This episode is brought to you by Pine Melon, the farmer's market delivered. Pine Melon is a next-generation grocery delivery app that partners with over 200 farmers, ranchers, and producers in Colorado to help make fresh, locally sourced foods available to the Denver community at fair prices. Get high-quality meats, eggs, and dairy from small local farms, fresh baked breads from local bakeries, and more, as well as all of your favorite pantry staples. Best part is, Pine Melon offers same-day delivery to Denver and soon Boulder within a two-hour window, no subscription necessary. Save time in your busy schedule and get fresh and healthy groceries delivered right to your door. Join the movement and support local today. Use promo code CITYCASTDENVER for $75 off your first delivery at pinemelon.com. That's pinemelon.com.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
All right, we're back. We're going to do a round of the segment we're now calling Mile High Highs and Lows, aka Wins and Fails of the Week. So we've each picked a local story that we thought was a win and we thought it was a fail, and we're going to talk about them.
Why do you call it Mile High, Highs and Lows?
Brie, that was
your
invention.
I came up with that last week.
Yeah. Really?
So here we are, Mile High, Lows. Who wants to do the first low?
I got one. Denver Gazette, they just put out an article. 1 in 6 Colorado judges have not been in compliance with submitting their financial disclosures. Horrifying.
1 in 6?
1 in 6. Isn't that so high?
What is the implication of that?
Well, it's illegal. They're out of compliance. And so you can put in a complaint. But the article, they go over the responses. Some of them are like, there's no excuse. Some of them are like, I'm boring. And so there's just this big variation between the different judges. They need to be doing this. There's obvious reasons why we need financial disclosures.
Tell me.
Yeah, there's that the game theory. We need to know who's influencing these judges. If they're getting huge donations from certain people, that's could potentially influence their decisions on trials, that's dangerous for the entire state of Colorado. And so in order for them to be held accountable, we have to have the truest information about who's donating to their campaigns, which is why we need these financial disclosures.
So on a national level, folks have been watching this play out with Clarence Thomas,
yeah.
Right? So it's just like the local level version of this.
Exactly.
Okay.
And it's not great. 1 in 6 is too high. Yeah, so.
I'll say, geez. Okay, that's a mile high low. Brie, you want to go next?
Mine is really sad. Okay. And it's going to start out sounding like it might be funny. And it is not funny at all. So I live by Danny Dan's and I love their marquees. Like, I love them. Whoever writes them, they're funny. They're usually contextual to whatever's going on the block. They will be responding. They're quippy. They're jokes. And so I just assume they're always funny. And I drove by the other day and it just said Jason. And it was like a couple days of this. And I was like, okay. So I asked my Instagram, I'm like, okay, who's Jason? Ha ha, what's the joke? And my friend Gary Rednest reached out to me, who's a door guy around town, and was like, Jason was the DJ at Dandy Dan's, who also helped them sometimes with security at the door. And he escorted someone out the other night who was not, I don't know what happened exactly. It had nothing to do with this gentleman. He was just doing his job. And they shot and killed him in the parking lot. And his name was Jason Perry. He moved here from San Diego. He came here like so many people come here with big dreams for Colorado. He was a DJ. He was doing really good. He was making money on what he loved, which was playing music for people. He played at Dandy Dan's. He also played at weddings. He played at parties. He was a very popular, wonderful, sweet guy. And I just was like, it just brought me back to this conversation we've had so many times about gun violence here and everywhere, which is we focus on the mass shootings, which are horrendous, but every day we lose people for no reason whatsoever, completely preventable, no reason whatsoever, wrong place, wrong time situation. And it just reminded me that my neighborhood suffers from this a lot more than a lot of other neighborhoods do. And I know that my council person is really aware of it and cares about it, but it just made me sad that this happened to a person who was just at work, just living his life.
Yeah. Pour some champagne out for Jason.
Yeah.
Jason Perry.
Jason Perry. I just wanted to say his name too, because I just, I think of, I read this. So he, again, he was from San Diego. And when I Googled, like trying to find more information about him after Gary told me who he was, I found this interview with his dad because the San Diego media was writing about it. And his dad was just like, just a wonderful person. And I, as a parent, again, I can't imagine losing my kid before me. And so I just want to give some love to Jason Perry's friends and family here in Denver and to his family in San Diego. And just a reminder that gun violence impacts us every day in ways that ruins lives and just ruins communities.
So, just stupid, random
just
violence.
Stupid, random violence for no reason other than this guy was at work doing his job. Ugh. So, Paul, what do you have?
I just take a second to be angry about that.
I know. I'm sorry. I know. I feel helpless at this point too. It's like, also, here's a really grim part of that situation. Dandy Dan's installed these giant lights in their parking lot to deter people from doing stuff in the parking lot. Those lights are not going to save somebody from getting murdered. Like, yeah.
So what else are they supposed to do?
Yeah. And is it, yeah. Like, what are they supposed to do? They're just, however you feel about sex work, I don't care. It's a small business in Denver. That guy went to work to do his job, hang out with his coworkers. And it was a Tuesday night. It was like, I cannot imagine this man just going to his job, doing his job. And then this is what happens. So.
Stuff. Sad.
Well, if anyone's having any kind of like reaction or like feeling about the location of this stupid random violence, I would just encourage you to go back and listen to our episode with Megan Ululani Boynton of the Denver Post about strip clubs from, I think, 2 weeks ago now. We talked about the stigma around that, around that whole world, that industry. That was a really interesting episode. We have an update coming on that soon, which people should stay tuned for.
Yes.
Yeah. Honestly, fascinating.
Fascinating stuff.
Can't wait to share it. Okay, well, you two brought some good fails, but sorry, mine is the best.
Okay.
I found this morning. It's not really even a fail. It's like something I needed an excuse to talk about because I found someone posted on Reddit in response to the article that Westward said that Elitch Gardens has been scoping out Aurora
for
locations. So I saw this, someone posted, hey, remember when Aurora almost had the biggest amusement park in the world called Science Fiction Land? Apparently in 1979, some Hollywood movie producer had this giant idea for a movie adaptation of this obscure sci-fi novel, Lord of Light, by Roger Zelazny. And anyway,
deep in Paul's world right now.
I was about to say, what?
even to me, a huge fan, this is an obscure novel I have not read. But he wanted to build an amusement park that had like more than 2,000 hotel rooms, a 38-story Ferris wheel, a 30-story structure that would contain a 1,000-lane bowling alley with robot workers, streams where guests could fish for trout, park employees on jetpacks.
That's sick.
That's guy's plan.
Everything about this.
Yes. Boat rides that could turn into submarines, laser hall. This is like detailed. Wow. It was going to be huge.
I also just love when an obscure piece of art inspires someone so much that they want to like build a world around it.
Well, I think cocaine also might have inspired this one. But
cocaine has fueled a lot of the things that we've loved at this table. Let's be honest. As a comedian and a musician and a person that reads books, let's talk about it.
I'm a good Christian boy. All right.
Never heard of it. Never heard of it. I don't know her.
So what happened?
Well, what happened is it just didn't work out because the whole thing was premised on a movie adaptation of the book. Uh-huh. And then the movie adaptation, like, it didn't work out. And then the script, like, it ended up getting used for, this is such a stupid tangent, but it's also weird. But the script ended up being used for that CIA plot that Ben Affleck made that movie about, the Iran-Contra plot. The movie they were going to fake produce in Iran as a front.
I think Argo is the name of it. Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, he won the Oscar for Best Director for that movie.
So there you go. We didn't get Science Fiction Land, but we got Ben Affleck's directing Oscar. I don't know.
So this was 79.
It's just weird.
Where does this fall in the Star Wars of it all?
That would be 2 years after Star Wars.
Why wouldn't it have gotten made? It feels like after Hollywood figured out Star Wars is this massive thing, wouldn't you think that people were like, oh, let's capitalize.
Have you ever watched the Star Wars Christmas special? All right. I feel like.
Seems like it might have been a little bit closer to that. Yeah. A little bit further from.
Oh, okay. So the fail is we didn't get Science Fiction Land.
Yes. The fail is we didn't get Science Fiction Land. That's my mile high low.
Oh,
God. Right. I'm bummed for, as an amusement park enthusiast, I am sad we didn't get that either.
I'll post a link to the article so everyone can read it. Just so fun.
Maybe a
so
Denver's fun. Next boom, since we're coming off of one. Maybe, you know, in 40 or 50 years, we'll finally get it.
Yeah. Well, didn't the article say, like, it was like pure speculation that was going to be in Aurora at all? Like, you just like said that. It's like, hey, what if we put it here? I was I love that. I love that he's just creating buzz out of nothing.
Totally.
You know what I mean? That's.
He's like, my cousin Larry lives in Aurora. He says it's great.
Yeah.
There's nothing there. Let's do it. Land's cheap. Can you imagine land in Aurora in 1979? It probably costs no dollars.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hashtag Elitch is East, I guess. Is that what it is? Let's start it right now, okay? Let's
Elitch
make this a city.
3.0.
Yeah.
new Elitches.
New. Oh, gosh.
All right, let's move on to our wins.
Okay.
Who wants a mile high high? Who wants
mile.
Who's got a mile
high high? I got one for the Denver Zoo. We do some field conservation out on the Navajo Nation with bighorn sheep. They have like this disease and it's killing like whole flocks. And so big deal, important work. But we've been able to identify a Navajo biologist, Jamie Begay. And we just officially are able to provide her a scholarship for her master's program up at CSU. So she's coming down to the zoo every now and again. She's going there this semester to graduate, but she's doing real field work on the Navajo Nation, in conjunction with the Denver Zoo, getting professional mentorship out on the Navajo Nation, being able to find, it's so hard to find like Navajo biologists, indigenous biologists in general. And it makes a lot of sense, you know, because animals and indigenous people, they have strong connection. And so it's just so cool to see somebody able to be able to do that, to work in these colonized institutions, have them work for them, and be able to get the respect in both worlds, I guess. It's so rare to find that. And good luck to Jamie. I hope you work for 30 years and you have a huge impact on the people that, you know, I love.
I was just going to say, and I think about all the young people that are watching her
and
learning that this is something I can do.
Yeah, exactly.
Very cool. Incredible. That's a great one.
Also, again, we just love the Denver Zoo.
That's
it's kind of awesome, the stuff that they do that's community connected. So
yeah, come say hi to me. Yeah, I'll be out there. I'll be yelling.
Moonlights at the Denver Zoo.
That's right. I'm an elephant, okay?
You're in the Toyota Elephant area. What's it called?
Toyota Elephant Passage. Yeah. I hate that I have to say Toyota every time. But, you know.
It's a cool part of the zoo, I have to say.
And Groucho is so funny. So he's like the... I'm just going on a tangent on the zoo right now. So we're one of the only North American zoos that can handle multiple bull elephants because they do this thing called muss, where they get super aggressive. Their testosterone shoots up and they fight each other and fight everybody around them. And so that's why we had to get this huge, it's like 10 acres and they can change how they walk and stuff like that. But we're the only place that can solve this problem of like, you can only have one bull elephant usually, but in nature, they form these bachelor herds and they
have a bachelor herd.
We have a bachelor herd headed up by Groucho. He's the one with the weird ear. It's 51 years old. So he's the homie, man. He's grumpy and he's the adult and I love him so much.
Yeah. See, now you know next time you go to the zoo, you're watching a bachelor pad in action.
That's right.
I love it. Paul, what about you?
Okay. Well, my Mile High High is for impact journalism. Our past guest, Jesse Paul, who's a reporter for the Colorado Sun, he delivered a really, really important and impactful story this week about HOAs, these petty tyrants who our legislators and our state government have been going after for years, but apparently they keep finding ways to screw people over. This person that Jesse told us about, Darren Biggis, is a perfect example. He bought a $267,000 home in Aurora a few years ago. He remodeled. He invested in this place. But then because his credit card was stolen, he inadvertently stopped paying HOA dues, and the HOA foreclosed on his house. He was paying his mortgage.
This was mind-blowing to me that they have the power to do that. I mean, I'm glad legislators are addressing this now, but like, losing your home is traumatic. Losing your home to this thing that's supposed to be a benefit to you, right? I mean, that's the sale. That's what people sell you on with an HOA is like, you pay into this thing, but they take care of all this stuff. But they also could take your house. Ugh, yucky. Yucky all around.
I cannot stand HOAs. I don't think they provide real benefit to homeowners. I feel like the harm they do has been shown over and over and over again. I can't stand them. I feel like it attracts the worst type of people to them as well.
Petty tyrants.
Yeah.
That's petty the other tyrants. Thing is like, so I'm thinking about it. My poor mother. Hi, Brooke. I'm talking about you again. she lives in a condo, and she's actually just finishing her tenure on her HOA board. But the thing is, the HOA board is in charge of important stuff in like a building. It's like the roof being replaced or the HVAC system. Or remember what happened in Florida when that building collapsed on itself? Because the people that were on the HOA were deferring maintenance and deferring maintenance and deferring maintenance. So HOAs in theory could be a good democratic body, but it's like who is on it.
Right.
And how they use that power is not good. So I just want to say sometimes there's good people on HOAs, but generally speaking, it feels like they are maybe neglecting things that should be important and then also doing terrible things
like happens.
Taking someone's home.
Yeah.
Taking someone's
unbelievable.
Home.
Weird. Unbelievable. Anyway, so we'll post a link to that story in the show notes so you can read it. But the impact part, this is why it's a win. Governor Jared Polis and a group of Democrat state lawmakers, they apparently read the piece. They say they're working on it. They're working on some changes, close some loopholes, figure this out. Next session.
Governor Polis has been on my SH list.
Oh, really?
This week.
I mean, he's trying to launch his like campaign, right? Isn't that the idea of...
failing in certain ways, but I'm glad he's taking this on, and I agree with you, Paul. I think Jesse does great, really great reporting, and if we didn't have local journalism, we wouldn't have stories like this to help people figure out why their house got taken away. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that's where journalism is so impactful. So thank you, Jesse, Paul. Great story.
Great story. All right, Bree. Bring us home.
Yeah, so the Oriental Theater on the north side is finally getting their neon sign replaced. Maurice Neon, friend of the show, Todd.
Shout
out to Todd. They're working on it. And I can share some links in our show notes to it. They took the remaining like glass pieces off and just have painted the sign so far. And it looks amazing because I've never seen it not like kind of falling apart. So they're repainting the sign and they're rebuilding the neon. And neon is it's such a intense art form that takes extreme skill, and it's very fragile. And it like in our atmosphere or in the ambiance of a city, neon is pretty incredible.
Oh yeah.
And so the fact that we're gonna have this brand new piece of neon on the north side, just like I can't wait to see it.
I feel the exact same way. That's already a beautiful sign, and it sounds like it's gonna be even more special. Joshua, you just moved to the north side. Is the Oriental a place for you?
I love the Oriental. Lucha Libre Laughs is one of the most fun shows I've ever been a part of. If you don't know what it is, it's pro wrestling and comedy. Super fun. And then Dyketopia is having their second year anniversary. I think coming up pretty soon. So yeah, check that out. Yeah.
Dyketopia is this fantastic podcast.
Fantastic podcast and show. Yeah. Kate McLaughlin. And she's not going to be happy I said it that way.
I feel like you're giving an inside joke to your comedian.
Yeah. So me and Kate McLaughlin, we went to college together at Fort Lewis. Yeah. So we both started comedy together in Durango. So I've known them for a long time. And then Lee Robinson. And it started off in a backyard, and it's taken a hold. They sold out the Oriental last time. They're going to sell it out this time. And
which is incredible.
It's amazing.
That's a big room. And this is something, too, that I think is so crucial for folks to know, is the Oriental Theater is one of the only rooms of that size run by an independent group of people. It is not run by AEG. It is not run by Live Nation. So something like Dyketopia has the opportunity to even rent the stage there and sell it out. Like,
it's beautiful.
The Oriental really helps artists in this community build followings and foundations by being a place that you can book. And so shout out to the folks at the Oriental. We did Mortified there, which was, I think, sold out too. It was so much fun. I love that place.
Did you read from your journal?
Oh, I did.
Oh, man.
It was the 90s. You really missed.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Some
it was
good
a lot of troll doll stuff. You know? Yeah.
Mine was more about being in love with Kurt Cobain and then being really sad.
Oh, no. You went through that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
I wore black, all black every year on his death anniversary to high school.
Oh, man.
Pretty serious.
When did you stop doing that?
I think probably like junior year. I think I went like 2 years.
Bring it back. Yeah. Bring it back on her. Yeah.
I was an intense Nirvana fan. But again, the Oriental Theater, I just, endless love to them. I'm so stoked. Again, you know this too. It has a marquee on it. If you get to see your name on a marquee like the Orientals, it's like, I've made it. I have arrived. So
there's not many better in the city than that sign and that marquee. That's just beautiful.
So shout out to the Oriental. Shout out to Maurice Neon for doing that work and making that place look beautiful.
All right. Well, here we are at the end of the show. I think time for just a couple more things. Joshua, I'd love to give you some space, plug some upcoming shows or anything else you might want people to see or hear.
Yeah, absolutely. I do this show called Colorado Native. It's a Native American comedy showcase. We're partnering with the Museum of Contemporary Art August 24th at the Holiday Theater, another beautiful theater by North High School. Would love to have you out, please. I am scared of the amount of tickets I need to sell, to be honest.
That's a cool. It's a big space.
Yeah. Big space, yeah. And then we're doing it up at Fort Collins the day before at the Comedy Fort, and then we're doing it at the Dairy. It'd be my last show at the Dairy, so that'll be
in Boulder.
That's right. Yeah. So and then yeah, please come out. I'd love to see you. I'm very nice in person. If you ever meet me in person, I smell good. The charisma that you hear on air, it comes. Yeah,
it's fragrant. It's fragrant.
Yeah, no, but I'd love to see all you out there. I appreciate you.
We'll put links to all those in the show notes.
Sounds great. All right. Well, so no weekend events this week because, as I mentioned last week, we are changing some things up on the show. Stay tuned to next week if you've been hankering for more wrecks. But we didn't want to leave you high and dry. So to end the show this week, we're going to share a voicemail we got a couple days ago from a listener. But before we hear that, Joshua, Bree, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks, Paul.
It's been my pleasure.
Hi, this is Diana Romero Campbell. I'm the new city councilwoman in District 4 in Southeast Denver. And I wanted to say and invite you to a maybe we'll see you there on the weekend for the South by Southeast Festival at Bible Park. It's this Saturday, August 19th, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. There's going to be food trucks and activities and live music and a beer garden and just lots of fun. And since you all have Southeast Denver hearts, I wanted to invite you to come out to the South by Southeast Festival. Hope to see you there. Bye.
That's all for today here on CityCast Denver. Our producers this week were me, Paul Caroli, and Olivia Jewel Love. Peyton Garcia, Natalia Aldana, and Adrian Gonzalez write our morning newsletter, Hey Denver. Bree Davies is our host. Our music is by Los Mocochetes, with additional mixing by Tyler Lindgren. If you haven't already, subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Instagram, at CityCast Denver, and tell Roger Zelazny's family about us next time you see him. You can sign up for that daily newsletter and learn more about us at denver.citycast.fm. See you next week. Such a nerdy name. We could have had an amusement park dedicated to this extremely obscure sci-fi writer.